Hello, my name is Colin Daniels. I'm the Working Age and Young People Service Manager for the Macular Society. Now, as you might know, the Macular Society hosts two live webinars each month focusing on all aspects of living with macular disease. We speak to leading experts, clinicians, and researchers about the latest in macular disease. The first of the webinars focuses very much on age-related macular degeneration, and the second on areas for people of a working age and a bit younger. Now, we understand that not everyone has the opportunity to watch our webinars, so we have decided to turn some of the content into podcasts. The podcasts will be available on all good podcast platforms. So here we go. Welcome to the employment webinar hosted by the Macular Society. For those of you who don't know me, my name is Colin Daniels, and I'm the working age manager. We're going to have a chat about employment, things to consider about employment when you have sight loss, and also access to work and all sorts of bits and pieces that can support people while they're in work. So here we go. So we're going to go run through our panelists. I'm going to start with our two Welsh regional managers. I'm going to start in the north.
Lovely to hear from you all. My name is Marion Williams and I'm the regional manager for North Wales.
Hi, I'm Adele Francis and I'm the regional manager for South Wales.
Now, we've got two speakers, well, not really speakers, but they're people that are going to come and tell their stories and point people in the right direction. So one of the first person I'm going to introduce is somebody I've been working with for about 15 years, and she works an organisation in Essex. We did have another from JobSense in Wales, but unfortunately, she had the dreaded Omicron to join us this evening. So Gigi has stood in at the last minute, so thank you very much, Gigi.
Yeah, hi everyone. My name is Gigi. As Colin said, I'm an employment professional working with blind and partially sighted people the last 12 years, but I'm doing employment support the last 16 years, and I work for a charity in Essex, but I tell you all about it a little later.
And I'll just introduce Nick. So Nick Thomas, he works for the North Wales Association for the Blind, but he's here to tell us about his story and his journey through work after sight loss, and also the fact that he is a part of Team GB as archery.
Hello, everybody.
Brilliant. So I think what I'll do now is I'm going to hand over to Gigi to introduce herself a little bit further. As I say, Gigi, as she says as well, works for Support for Sight and Essex. We've worked very closely together with a couple of charities. I'm gonna hand you over to you just to have a little chat about what your thoughts are.
Okay.
Sight loss and employment.
Thanks, Colin. So yeah, thank you for having me, and I was happy to stand in. Obviously, always happy to help out the Macular Society, and you guys always help me out too. So thank you for thinking of me. And yes, I actually had the privilege to share an office with Colin for 5 years once upon a time. So that was quite a good experience, and I learned a lot from him. So my background, as I mentioned, I'm an employment professional. I have been working in the supporting people with disabilities in the last 16 years, and the last 12 years I only work with blind and partially sighted people. I work for a charity called Support for Sight. We are based in Essex, and we've been very fortunate to have funding from the Big Lottery for a five-year project to support blind and partially sighted people in the Essex area with all employment-related inquiries. So we have people who are looking for jobs. We have people who are in work but struggling to keep their employment because of their sight loss. We have people who are self-employed and they have an idea but don't necessarily know how to set up their own business. We also support people who have to maybe take ill health retirement. And we also have a number of people who are just looking for some meaningful volunteering opportunities. So we support those clients as well. In terms of Support for Sight, we only cover a small part of Essex, the Mid and West Essex area, but with the Big Lottery we are able to cover the whole of Essex and work with other organizations and other partners who refer clients into us. Like other societies, there is four local societies, and we work very closely with the local job center offices and the disability employment advisors. And one of the the questions sometimes clients ask me when they are being referred to me. They kind of want to work, but they're not too sure why should they work, what they're going to gain out by going to work every day. And I think is definitely a very private matter whether somebody can and want to work. But I really believe if somebody wants to work, regardless their disability, they should be working. And that's what we're kind of promoting. And obviously it just helps people with their self-esteem. They just have a better feel about themselves. They feel part of society. They included in their community. Obviously they earn money, so they can go and spend their money and paying back with taxes and various other ways. And it just makes people better, I guess, when they earn, spend the money that they earn rather than what they maybe give or get given as benefit. And I think most people just kind of want to work because that's what we all, or most people do. And I think anybody who wants to work should get a job and should work. And I think we should definitely support anybody who would like to go into employment. What I do with job seekers, which is not obviously across the whole country, and I don't know where all of you are from, but I do various and offer various support. So I offer information, advice and guideline sessions to my clients. Obviously is tailored to their individual needs. I don't necessarily do face-to-face one-to-ones anymore, but I definitely do one-to-one sessions, which can be over the telephone or can be over some platform. And what I also do is I run Zoom job clubs. And actually, I'm starting one now next week, which is a national job club. I'm working together with 10 other sight loss organizations across the UK, and I'm going to be leading their pre-employment session, but it's 10 organizations who's working together. So if any of you here are interested to join a job club, please like calling or one of the ladies from the society, you know, and I would be happy to have you as a client as of starting next week for 6 weeks. So that should be, and can I just say this is the first time we're doing it as a national thing, offering this support for blind and partially job seeking clients. And a couple of things, just like if you unemployed and you're thinking about work and you're not sure if it's for you, there's a couple of things maybe can help you along the way. Firstly, maybe do some volunteering, just find out whether actually you can commit to kind of a work environment, just in terms of getting up and leaving your house and working a couple of hours. You can also, as I just mentioned, join a job club. It doesn't have to be the one that I'm running. It can be maybe something is offered in Wales by somebody, I'm not too sure, but just find out, go to your local job centre and try to see what other partners they're working with that they can maybe support you achieving your dreams. Get any courses, maybe apply for courses that is available to you. So many stuff, well, mostly online, but they are mostly free as well, and you can just gain some skills or some understanding or some knowledge about a particular subject that maybe is an interest to you. And please get into a routine of not necessarily like going to work, but just getting up, do some job search, think about what you want to achieve, and having, and maybe set some very achievable short-term goals that would keep you motivated because you are achieving them, rather than having some really long-term goal that maybe would be become true in 5 years' time, that probably not going to get you going all the way to the end. And if you are about to do job searching, one of the questions I get asked all the time is, what can I do now I'm visually impaired? What jobs that are there for blind people or partially sighted people? And the answer is that I really don't know, because just because you have a disability, it definitely isn't going to define your skill set, your ability, your knowledge, and all the potential things that you can do. So obviously visual impairment is a major part of your life, and it's something that you need to maybe understand and know how to deal with. But probably as you live with your sightless, you are an expert in how to live your life with the sightless. But there's so much support out there. And if you can advocate for yourself front of an employer, I'm certain you know, they're gonna employ the right person rather than somebody who is maybe just fully sighted but not the right person. Think about maybe just things that would make you leave your house rather than just try to think about the perfect job with the perfect job title that maybe doesn't even exist. Just try to think about you as a person, what you would like to do and what would make you to leave your house and what kind of things that would interest you. Also, please think about financial aspect of getting a job. So Colin and I came across this many, many times in our work where somebody got a job and actually they were worse off by going to work. They were losing out. And just try to think of, you know, what, how much do you need and what kind of situation would make you kind of getting a job, make you in a better position than current you are in. I think so many people dismiss the financial aspect of going to work. There's something that maybe even Colin and I can help you. There is a calculation that you can have completed, which is called the Better Off Work Calculation, which clearly shows you how much would you be better off if you would go into work. But if you need any support, as I said, I'm starting the job club next week, so anybody's welcome. We don't have any location restriction. Anybody who's interested to join a 6 weeks pre-employment program backed up by a Visionary, which is a national organization holding us small charities together, please just get in touch with me via Colin or the ladies here. In the job club, obviously, we're going to cover all the usual things like giving information, advice and guidelines on the usual job seeking aspect of things like CVs, cover letters, how you should disclose your disability to a potential employer in a positive way. We're going to talk about access to work, which I'm sure most of you, if not all of you, heard of by now. And we're also going to be offering assistive technology sessions as part of this pre-employment program, because obviously technology is a massive part for anybody who is, well, if you are a job seeker, you're probably using technology to apply for jobs. So that's probably from me in the nutshell. Thank you so much.
Perfect. Thank you, Gigi. That's really excellent. So that's really cool. I think this might just be a good opportunity for me just to explain a little bit about the JobSense project, because JobSense is an organization that works across Wales supporting people with sensory loss. So but people that are either blind or partially sighted or have some hearing loss into work. And generally they're those people, and that might be a little further away from work, who just need that little bit of additional support. So as Gigi mentioned in her little chat there, that if you're a little for sort of job seeking support and CVs and bits and pieces and job clubs in Wales, JobSense would be would really be the place to probably contact if you're not in work at the moment and you just need that bit of additional support. What I will do, if you want any information about JobSense, I'm going to ask my support worker, Jess, who's also here, who I forgot to introduce her. Sorry, Jess. She's going to try and pop some information in the chat. They did send me some blurb. But if she can't do that, if you just want to contact me and I can pop you in contact with them, and I'll send the information to Adele and Marianne as well. So that's perfect. So that's JobSense in Wales, that you can get that individual support in Wales. So that's the place to go. So thank you, Gigi, for your introduction and sort of explaining what your thoughts are around employment. So now we're going to move on to Nick. So Nick Thomas, as I said, works for the North Wales Association, and he's going to sort of tell his story and his journey around employment and talk a little bit about his archery as well. So I'll hand over to you, Nick.
Okay, brilliant. Thank you, Colin. So my name is Nick Thomas, and I am the development officer for the North Wales Society for the Blind in North Wales, based in Bangor. I've been working for them for the past 4 years, and you know, I'm just going to try and share a bit of my kind of employment journey with you guys. Hopefully it'll be, you know, a bit of a positive message about employment. You know, we all hear all the kind of the negative and the downsides of people trying to, you know, find a way into employment and things, especially with, you know, a disability and sight loss. But, you know, hopefully my kind of journey will be, a bit of a positive story. So just to give you a little bit of a background, so I'm registered as severely sight impaired. I have Stargardt's macular dystrophy, so central vision loss. I was diagnosed at the age of 19. You know, I've always been, you know, Colin's mentioned my archery and stuff, which I'll hopefully get onto a bit later on. But I've always been, you know, from a young lad, I've always been a sporty person, always, you know, sport's been a big part of my life. So, you know, progressing from school, pre-sight loss in a way, you know, the kind of the natural progression for me from school was to go into work with sports and coaching in sports centres, in local sports centres. So, you know, I began on the YTS scheme, for everybody who remembers what the YTS scheme is or was, you know, starting off full-time hours for £32.50 a week or whatever it was back then. Hard work, but, you know, developing and learning a lot of skills in the leisure industry, you know, working hard, qualifying to get qualified as a lifeguard, you know, and a qualified coach in numerous different sports. And then, you know, the unfortunate kind of time came where I was diagnosed with Stargardt's. And then, you know, kind of the health and safety issue of, you know, being a lifeguard, trying to supervise a pool full of people swimming, then meant that I was unable to carry on and unable to fulfill what my job role was at that time. So, you know, I think Zuzi mentioned earlier on that, you know, everybody has their own decision to make around if you want to work or if you don't want to work, especially when you do have a disability. You know, I'm a massive and a firm believer of, you know, I've always wanted to work. There's been no kind of period in my life where I've thought to myself, oh, you know, I can just kind of sit back now and you know, I've got money coming in through benefits or through this and that, and I can sit back and, you know, have a kind of a period where I'm just being at home and relaxing. You know, I've always wanted to work. And it's, you know, like's been mentioned, it's a personal choice. But for me, it was right, I have to work, I have to adapt. So, you know, my journey became one of kind of transference in a way. So what I did was when I learned that, you know, carrying on working in sports centres wasn't going to be possible to fulfil the job that I wanted to do, what I did was I kind of looked back on the skills that I had developed over the 2 or 3 years that I worked in the sports centres, and I found my way into a sports development role, which then meant that, you know, the health and safety issues of, you know, me supervising people swimming and, you know, the implications of what could go wrong if I didn't spot anything happening were negated and kind of taken away. So I moved from a kind of a hands-on coaching and supervising role into a role where I was developing and facilitating after school sports clubs in schools for a project called Dragon Sports. So, you know, we used to travel around primary schools throughout Gwynedd in North Wales, the county, and, you know, work with primary schools to develop after school clubs, to engage volunteers that were able to then come in to be trained by us to then run that sports club. So I moved away from a hands-on coaching role to then, you know, a role which meant that I didn't have to rely as much on my sight, and it wasn't as important to be, you know, able to see everything that was going on. But then I was still able to work and still work in the field that I was interested in the sports field. So, you know, we kind of developed myself in there. I was able to take, you know, different courses to train myself to be a trainer assessor as well. So I was building confidence in the way that I dealt with not only, you know, young children and young people that I had done in sports centres, but I was now developing a way of, you know, coaching and teaching adults as well. So all the time building confidence and building my skill set. Now, when the time came that role was becoming increasingly difficult for me to fulfill, obviously because of my deteriorating eyesight. And as Marianne will know, the geography around where we live, you know, getting from a base office in Pwllheli to a primary school down in Bala or Dolgella was becoming quite, you know, quite a mission in a way. So it became a kind of decision for myself of trying to find a way around that. And obviously there was support available through Access to Work, but just the geography and the time it was taking for me to travel from one place to another was becoming increasingly difficult and becoming a problem. So the decision then for me was, right, do I stick in this role and, you know, spend an awful lot of time in the back of a taxi or in the back of a car, not doing what I want to do? Or do I, again, use the skills that I've learned over the past few years and transfer that to another job where I could then fulfill and be happy in what I'm doing? So what I did was I used the skills that I developed by working with primary schools, and I actually moved into a job working in a primary school. So I became a kind of one-to-one teaching assistant for children and young people with additional educational needs and aggressive behaviour, but also using my kind of sporting background to take on the physical education for that school. So every physical education lesson for every class, I was the one taking them. I was developing, you know, the lessons and the lesson plans, and, you know, organising games and fixtures to play against other primary schools. So, you know, that was taking me then again, you know, a kind of a little sideways step from the development and working in the primary school, still working on the sports side, but then able to develop extra skills and additional skills in working with children and young people with, you know, a wide range of additional needs and disabilities, you know, from autism, you know, people with, there was one with sight loss. So, you know, that was a good kind of way for me to develop working with and pass on my knowledge of sight loss to other people as well. During the period where I was working in the primary school, I also started to volunteer with the North Wales Society of the Blind. So I was volunteering with the rehabilitation team there to work and help them out with VI awareness training sessions. So we were going into university in Bangor, going into different groups and, you know, putting on VI awareness training sessions. And I was also volunteering as a mentor. So for, you know, any young person coming through, just been diagnosed with sight loss, you know, I was there as a kind of a sounding board, somebody to listen and to pass on my experiences and, you know, things that I found that helped me to cope with my sight loss. I was able to speak to them and kind of do that, you know, kind of tell them and hope that that was then able to help them develop and kind of, you know, work their own way and their own path through their sight loss. And then obviously, you know, as I mentioned, I now work for the North Wales Society for the Blind. You know, that came from the hours of volunteering that I did. An opportunity came up to work for them. I applied for the job, obviously got an interview and lucky enough to get the job. And now I consider myself to be in, you know, my kind of dream job. There's nothing about the job I don't enjoy doing. You know, being able to support other people with sight loss on a day-to-day basis is just something that personally helps me as well. So, you know, I really enjoy getting up and going to work every morning and meeting the people and seeing how, you know, we can help and develop. I do get support from Access to Work. So, you know, it's really important that everybody knows what Access to Work do, what they can offer.
We'll get there in a second, Nick. Spoil the surprise.
Okay, cool. Right. But yeah, but that is something I do use. So, you know, that is a really useful thing to have and help. But yeah, so I work kind of part-time-ish, I would call my hours at the society. I work from 8:30 in the morning till 2 in the afternoon, which then allows me to come home and collect my children from school. So I can spend time with my children between, you know, the hours of like 3 and 6. And then during the nighttime, as Colin mentioned, I do an awful lot of training and developing my archery. So for the past 5 years, I have been a blind archer, believe it or not. And yeah, so I've been lucky enough to be selected and chosen to represent Great Britain at para archery. Been away to a European Championships in 2018. And I also took part at the World Para Archery Championships in 2019 in Holland, where I was very lucky and some would say very flukily, won a bronze medal. So yeah, so I've been, you know, been really fortunate, really enjoy it. And yeah, so currently ranked number 3 in the world and working hard and trying to develop to try and get a bit further up in the rankings and, you know, try and get a different colour medal next time, aiming for something. We've got European Championships coming up in Italy in August. So that's the next step and that's the next aim. But yeah, so that's my story and, you know, hopefully a positive one for people to hear.
Perfect. Actually, Nick, that was, you've had quite a journey. It's quite, inspirational, really. You've sort of gone, you've adjusted all the way through to every stage of your sight loss and your employment and not let it slow you down. And there's a few things that came up that you were talking about and Gigi mentioned as well. So I thought we'd go back right back to the beginning of all of this. So I'm going to ask you both. Nick, I'll ask you first. So what did you ever feel was the biggest barrier to employment for yourself?
Do you know what? I think I've got a little bit of a different view to this than most people that I've spoken to in a way. I mean, I'm quite a determined person. You know, I've never let anything kind of hold me back or hold me down. So for me, the biggest barrier for a person to be employed and to kind of go forward and try and get the job that they want is themselves. You know, if they let and have the kind of the mentality of letting things get in their way, then for me, that's the biggest barrier. Mm-hmm. You know, there's always ways that you can, you know, you can go around these barriers. You know, from what I've found anyway, there's always, you know, there's support available from different places. Granted, yeah, it is really difficult at times to find the support,
yeah,
and learn about them. But yeah, for me, you know, a little bit of a different view, a bit controversial maybe, but yeah, I think the biggest barrier is the person themselves.
Well, I think you'll find that's not controversial at all. So Gigi, I mean, you supported yes, alongside me for many years, sort of, but lots of people with different types of sight loss, yes, macular disease, different, and RP and all sorts of different conditions. So what did you find in your experience has been the biggest barrier that people tell you about to employment with sight loss?
Well, I think what people think is most of the time that employers are discriminating and they're just not interested to employ disabled people. So that's what I hear from my clients. But I don't know if you ask me what I think as well.
Oh, I think I need to know what you think. Absolutely.
Okay, then you don't have to ask that.
But
that's why I am hearing, yes, that you know, employers wouldn't want me because I'm blind or disabled or.
So taking that one step further, then Gigi, so do you feel that stops people applying for jobs that they can,
yes,
get?
Yes, definitely. And I think, yes, 100%. I think what people need sometimes and what I have them most of the time is giving them some motivation and yeah, they start believing in themselves. And what advice I give is not rocket science, is not something, you know, anybody else can tell you. The advice I give people is not the advice, it's about that I believe in them. If they're motivated, and a big word, mm-hmm, if they are relevant in the employment market,
yeah,
regardless their disability, they will get a job.
Okay, so relevant is a very important
relevant is my favorite word.
So do you want to expand on that a little bit?
Well, you just kind of, well, you just need to be relevant. You need to kind of know what the employer is looking for, in as much as you need to really just read the advert and fill out your application form or make your CV and cover letter. Obviously reflect their requirements and you just need to be relevant. I mean, I can give a bit of an exam, explanation that's maybe not too PC, but it's a very similar thing when you go, let's say, on a dating app and, you know, you put it down that you want to have, I don't know, blonde, I don't know, girl with long hairs and blue eyes, and then you go for a date and then some short girls turns off with brown eyes and doesn't look like what you imagine. That's exactly what the employer is doing. They're telling you what they're looking for. So you have to tell them that you are everything they are looking for. It's no point to be something else. It is exactly like dating. You have requirements and you want your date to fulfill whatever you want. And that's the same for the employer. And actually the lucky thing when you're looking for a job, I guess, as opposed to dating, you actually know what you need to be to get that job.
Absolutely.
It's so much easier than when you, I guess, go dating. So it's just literally read what's in front of you. What are they want you to be?
Yeah.
And be relevant. And if you're not, be honest. And if you're not, and if you're lacking at some skills and you're lacking experience and knowledge, then please do something about it. It's better to spend the next year, the next 12 months getting ready for a potential outcome that you're going to be, you know, able to secure a job than spend another next 5 years not doing anything, thinking, oh, I just can't do it. Of course you can.
Yeah, absolutely. So Nick, I want to ask you, so when you were applying for your jobs, Nick, did you mention your sight loss in your applications, or when it was only sort of relevant to the application that you were making?
No, I think me personally, I always kind of mentioned it because, you know, it was something that I kind of not wear as a badge of honor. That's kind of maybe the wrong term for it, but it wasn't something that I was ashamed of, and it wasn't something that I felt I should hide behind.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think expanding on what Georgie was saying, I think, you know, not enough people when applying for jobs pay enough attention to the job description and the personal specification.
Yes.
You know, you'll look at your you'll get the application form and you'll just start writing it out and filling in the boxes without, you know, kind of comparing what's on the job description and what's on the personal specification, because from those two sheets of paper, that's where you will get, you know, the information that the employer wants from you.
Absolutely.
And that's where you can link in your experiences, your skills, your personality into that job.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, that for me is the kind of the main point. You know, I'll be honest, I was rubbish at doing it because I'm not really good at bigging myself up. I'm not really good at,
thing. That's the thing, Nick, if you're relevant, you don't have to big yourself up.
Yeah.
You just need to write it down that I am relevant. I am everything that you're asking for. And then it's no bigging up. It's you just stating the obvious.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
The other thing, of course, is that, I mean, I know Gigi and I are on the same page with this completely, is people, you'll write your CV and then you won't make your CV relevant to the job description for the job that you're applying for. So, I mean, as usual, I think explain on one of our, because as usual, and I did a series of videos on employment, which you can find on the Macula Society YouTube channel. There's a good advert. But we did a whole session on a whole video on CVs.
First lockdown as well.
The first lockdown, yeah. So it's over Zoom. It's ridiculous. Anyway, well, actually, it might have been over Skype. Crikey.
It was Skype.
Where's that gone? Anyway, so we were talking about the fact that people go, I sent out 100 CVs and I got no responses. And one of the things that Gigi and I've always talked about over the years that we've been working with each other is that people need to update their CVs, don't they, Gigi, to benefit to reflect the job that they're applying for.
If you don't mind, I kind of even go further. You don't need to update it. You need to redo it for every single job. And if you're not willing to redo your CV, your personal profile, rename the document to tell the employer that this is my CV, sending it to you for one of whatever vacancy. If you're not willing to put the effort in, which can take maybe half an hour, up to an hour to personalize that CV for each employer, that you're not seriously looking for a job.
No, I absolutely agree with you. Yeah, it's...
Looking for a job is, as you know, Colin, is harder than working.
It is, yeah. It's
so tough. There is certain things you need to do, and if you're not willing to do it, then you're not serious.
No, absolutely. And it is, I mean, and at the end of the day, it's about if you put the effort in and you put the work in, and you will have it. I mean, it does take twice as long on average for somebody with a disability or sight loss to get a job. It just does.
Can I say something on that as well?
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
It's just a little thing that is also that can be the case because people don't necessarily understand access to work fully.
Yeah.
And they not understand that obviously they're going to have barriers and they're going to have issues, but it's not about finding a job where you're not going to have that. There is no jobs where with the sightless you're not going to have issues and barriers. It's about the understanding of that you can overcome those issues.
So Nick, what do you get from Access to Work?
I get travel to work. So, you know, I get my a taxi from my house to my job and then back home every day. I do have a travel in work element as well. But obviously, over the past few years, it's not been used because of COVID and various reasons. So that's just been sitting there doing nothing. You know, obviously, my employer had put in reasonable adjustments in the first place, equipment wise. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I also at the very beginning, I haven't actually done for a few years, but at the very beginning, I did put a claim in for 3 pieces of equipment.
Yeah.
And software, you know, just to help for me to kind of, you know, to work in an office environment in a way. But yeah, but, you know, it wasn't easy, you know, the application forms and, you know, getting response back from Access to Work. You know, I was lucky in a way that kind of the role that I do encompasses technology and accessibility and things anyway. So I was able to, you know, I knew what equipment I needed and I knew what where the equipment was going to come from and things like that. So that side of it was quite easy, but yeah, you know, it's not an easy process, but it is worthwhile.
Absolutely worthwhile. So Gigi, how many battles with Access to Work have we had over the years? So
yeah,
loads and loads and loads. So Access to Work, as Nick so rightly says, it's a government scheme and it's a grant. So it's not a benefit. It is not a welfare benefit. It is definitely a grant. So do you want to explain a little bit more about the scheme, Gigi?
Yeah, of course. So they usually have visually impaired people in 3 ways, exactly what Nick just mentioned. So you can have assistive technology advice, support. You can have travel support from work in the form of a taxi. And you can also apply for a person to help you out, who we call as a support worker. And the guidelines from Access to Work that the support worker can stay with you for the whole duration of your working hours, but they can only do up to 20% of your job description. Currently there is a couple of rules. I don't know if you want me to go into Colin with them.
Yes, yeah.
So if you you can have Access to Work or apply for Access to Work both if you are employed or if you're self-employed. If you're self-employed, you need to earn around £5,800 a year at least, which is equivalent if you would be on employment support allowance. So your business needs to make more, so is financially more, is better for the government to support you doing your self-employment business than being on benefits. And if you are working, then there is no restriction in terms of how many hours you can work. You can do as little as you want, or you can get a full-time job, but the overall yearly limit, which is capped now on Access to Work, with Access to Work, so your assistive technology support, your taxi to and from work, and your support worker hourly rate and their wages has to come below £58,500 per year. And what Nick said is sadly still the case. Nick, is a bit of a hassle to set it all up.
That is what I was hoping you were going to say. Yeah,
but quite still. Sometimes we have good experiences. We don't, but doesn't matter. I just kind of, as part of my job, to keep clients going and keep them motivating it and say one day you will have that call and it's all going to be okay.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, I just had a client who applied on the 18th of August and his case was approved 2 weeks ago. And for 3 months, nobody got in touch with him for no reason. But the good news is once it's in place and you have kind of a letter confirming the support that you're going to receive, then things can be quite good, and that just good for a couple of years until obviously you need to renew your claim and apply again. But it's still a bit of a process sometimes. But
okay, there's a couple of things that I just want to add to this at the moment. So just because of COVID, well, they keep saying it's COVID, there's a 12 week it takes about 12 weeks at the moment to get contact, or up to 12 weeks. So if you have a start date for a job or whatever, just tell them as soon as you can, really. But the sooner you apply, theoretically, the quicker it will all get sorted out. If you work for the civil service now, Access to Work does no longer exist. You have to go through adjustments through your workplace. And the other thing, one of the contingencies that Access to Work put in place for COVID is that you can do blended working. So you can work from home and an office. So if you need duplicate equipment, they will provide that through, and that's still in place. for the time being. And it looks like it might stay in place, which is very exciting. If you want further advice, you can contact me or Zhuzhi, and we'd be more than happy to talk you through it and support you through it. And we can cry together. It goes all very badly wrong, but generally it goes there. We get there in the end, but sometimes it's a bit of a battle. So the other thing I just wanted to quickly cover, so Nick mentioned it, and obviously Zhuzhi mentioned it as well, was volunteering. So how did you feel that volunteering supported you in sort of, you know, up with your skills and things so you could get the job you have now?
You know, I think for me, it was kind of exactly like you mentioned now, you know, it was by volunteering. I'd had an idea in my head for maybe 5 years, 6 years before I started work with the society, that I wanted to work at the society. But, you know, at that time, there wasn't an availability, and, you know, there wasn't any scope for development of the roles at the society back then. You know, Marianne was there and Marianne was doing all the work. So, you know, there was no room for anybody else. But yeah, you know, so while I was there and while I was volunteering, one, I was gaining new skills and confidence in working with people with sight loss. But, you know, a big part of it for me, which still is to this day, is by volunteering there and helping other people through their sight loss, I was helping myself.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I've always, you know, had kind of the kind of the up and down battles with mental health. And, you know, I always find that passing on my knowledge, my experiences, and being able to help somebody who is, you know, struggling with something, and then just by, you know, speaking to me and getting advice and listening to my experiences, them being able to achieve something from there, really, really does help me. It just gives me a massive kind of, you know, sense of I don't know, of you know, of belief in myself. Mm-hmm. So yeah, so the two things for me for volunteering was, one, I was gaining skills.
Yeah.
But two, you know, I was getting personal benefits from it as well.
Perfect. And Gigi, I know you have lots to say on this subject.
I think it's really a good way of bringing a gap, or minimize a gap where somebody's maybe long term unemployed and they're looking for, maybe they're thinking to get a job, is about, just again, my favorite word, making you a bit more relevant. Obviously, yeah. It's going to show you whether you can actually get up and leave your house and get ready and do stuff. It's going to obviously highlight a couple of needs that you might have in terms of assistive technology, what could support you in the workplace. And it just gives a really good kind of outlook on what life could be for you if you're going to go back to work. And obviously, volunteering is no pressure as such. You can sometimes not turn up if you can't, or you're not up for it. And it's just a really nice kind of easy way to dip your toes into the pool and see whether you like the water or not.
Absolutely. And whether you're ready to go back to work, I think that's important.
And some
that's
people,
important too. Yeah.
And then also, somebody has an experience within their family. Let's say they have a baby in the family and they suddenly really like babies and they really want to work with babies, and then they're volunteering in the nursery, and after 2 days they realize they don't actually like kids, they never have. And they rather work in Tesco. But yeah, it was a good idea to volunteer. So before you commit yourself to, I don't know, £500 course and get a qualification in childcare that you're never going to use, is good. You can just go and test the waters for yourself, really.
Absolutely.
what that likes, well, what could like for you to work.
Yeah, brilliant. I completely agree. Yeah, I can't think of anything worse. I think we're sort of getting to the end of our time, so I'm going to so Nick, really thank you for joining us this evening. I've really enjoyed your insights. I hope people have sort of understood your journey and see what maybe relate to it a bit. I mean, I certainly have. I think you've certainly, you know, you certainly strived through your sight loss and progressed through it and through your working life with it. It's good to hear. So thank you for coming. That's been very good. Thanks very much.
Pleasure. Thank you.
And Zhuzhi, It's a pleasure, as always, having a chat with you. I like your attitude towards supporting people with sight loss in and out of work. You know, you're one of my oldest friends. It's ridiculous.
Oh,
I know, it's ridiculous. People don't put up with me for this long usually, but there you go. Hey, so thank you for coming and standing in
thank
at such short notice.
Me.
So thanks very much. I will catch you hopefully at the next webinar.
Thank you.